My headache won't go away.
I get blurry vision.
My balance is awful.
I'm exhausted.
We can all get these symptoms from time to time. But if you or a loved one notice you're getting a combination of them regularly, don't ignore it. They could be signs of a brain tumour.
My headache won't go away.
I get blurry vision.
My balance is awful.
I'm exhausted.
To learn more about the common signs of a brain tumour, search Better Safe Than Tumour.
Welcome to Let's Talk About Brain Tumours, the podcast where we'll be talking to people who've been affected by a brain tumour diagnosis, either their own diagnosis or the diagnosis of a loved one. We'll also be sharing news and updates from the Brain Tumour Charity about what we're doing to halve the harm and double survival. Welcome to the podcast. In today's episode, we're joined by Simone Baldwin, the author of the book Mummy's Got a Lump, which she wrote after receiving her own diagnosis. So welcome to the podcast, Simone.
Thank you very much.
Would you like to give us a little bit of an introduction to yourself? We always get our guests to tell us a little bit about themselves.
Yeah, I'm Simone Baldwin. I was diagnosed with a vestibular schwannoma in 2017. It's a benign type of tumour, so I'm very fortunate. It's treatable. I had surgery. It was quite sizable, so it's done. I lost my balance and hearing as a result. I've had a few other sort of procedures as a result, but on the whole I'm doing okay. But I was a primary school teacher at the time, and it's affected how I can work, and it's had some long-term effect on me and my family life. I'm a mum and a stepmum. So when I was diagnosed, it was like so many people, it was a bit of a bolt out of the blue. I wasn't having a great deal of symptoms, so it was quite a shock. And like so many other people, you sort of having to decide, are you going to tell people? What are you going to say? And am I going to tell the children? And what am I going to say? And I was quite surprised and I felt a bit left in the dark, really. The lack of resources and support for helping me explain to the children. So that was my biggest concern. What am I going to say to the boys?
Did you ask your healthcare professionals, like, you know, your consultants and stuff, when you got diagnosed, how do I tell my children?
I don't remember, to be honest. I don't think I did. I know at the time when I was actually told about my diagnosis myself, I was on my own. It's all a bit of a blur.
That's where you were. Was it diagnosed in hospital, or were you sort of outside?
Yeah, I was diagnosed in hospital, but I'd just been for a routine MRI, but I'd been for an MRI and I went for the results not expecting anything at all. And there was the white picture in the middle, the white blob in the middle of the picture. So it was a bit of, and then obviously they had to refer me on to a specialist. So I didn't really know a lot about it at that stage. So I told my husband, obviously, and I decided at that time not to tell the boys until I knew a bit more. And I think for us, that was the right decision, because I didn't know any answers myself. We didn't know if it was going to be treatable, what those treatment options were going to be. And they were obviously the kinds of questions that you want to be able to answer, what's going to happen. So I think for me, that was the right decision at the time. And it was a little while till I had that follow-up appointment, and then we got a few more answers. So then we decided to speak to them, and I don't remember actually asking at the time, what should I tell the boys? It was after then I started looking for books and resources. I'm a primary school teacher. I've been a primary school teacher for a very long time, and I'm used to kind of signposting parents for all sorts of issues and difficulties and family situations. And when I needed that myself, I didn't know where to turn. I didn't know where to signpost myself to. It didn't seem to be that there was any obvious support for that specific. There was lots of support for me. So I had, it was, you know, instantly given a nurse who could help me and me talk about my problems, but actually I wasn't really concerned about me. I was concerned about my kids.
And that's so common. That is so
common, and I think people forget that as a parent, that is your primary concern, is your children. Even whatever's going on for you, your primary concern is, how is this going to affect them for the rest of their life? Because this is the sort of thing that could really impact a child way beyond like your diagnosis. As a parent, you're thinking longer term of their whole life, aren't you?
Exactly. And so the impact of your illness and how, what's that going to have on them? And then when you think sort of smaller and more immediate, the telling of them, you want to get that right. You know, you don't want to inflict any more damage or any more upset than you need to. And you want to get that right. I knew I wanted to tell the boys. Our kids are very switched on. I'm not very good at hiding my emotions anyway. So I knew fine well they would notice something was wrong very quickly. I felt quite dishonest at that small, very short period of time when I decided sort of we'd just hold back until I knew a bit more information. That in itself felt quite difficult, but I knew that was the right thing. There was no way I was going to be able to not tell them long term, and that was right for me. And I think, you know, we give kids some credit. They're not daft. And what I didn't want them doing is putting pieces together and coming up with something different, or, you know, sort of realizing something, or hearing parts of conversations, or seeing other people's reactions to me, because you can't control how other people react or what other people say, can you? So I wanted to be in control of that.
How old were they at the time?
So my youngest was 6. The older two were teenagers. So that was a bit easier to tell. The stepboys, and there are resources for teens. There were books available, but nothing for young children. And I get it. Nobody really wants to think about it, telling young children that. But unfortunately, some of us end up having to. And so you want to know that there's something there. I tried looking for pictures, so I knew I was, you know, going to explain it. And again, I'm fortunate. I work with children a lot, so I was quite confident in speaking to him and knowing that I would explain it and what language I would potentially use. But so I wanted to look for some pictures of perhaps scanners to try and explain things, and everything looked so clinical and so intimidating. Later on, when I knew I was going to be going into hospital, I wanted some pictures of hospital. He never really had experience of having a, you know, sort of any family member who was poorly or going into hospital, just to try and sort of
prepare him, what was to come, with that, so that he wouldn't be scared of what was happening, to normalize it almost.
Yeah, make it a little bit more familiar. But everything was so white and sterile and clinical and adult. So that was what sparked me. And it wasn't at the time I didn't think about creating something. At the time, it was just that, why isn't there anything? Why isn't there anything? These kids, I need it. I need it. So it was only, it was a few years later. And I think that niggle had just never quite gone away. And every now and again, I started to have I replayed telling him. And he's fine. We talk about it quite openly. And I felt...
How did you tell him?
We were playing, we were Lego. We were doing sort of Lego at the time. So I feel children there needs to be something to have an out. So a focus. So a book is great because you can distract with the pictures, or you can, you know, turn the next page. It's just something that can be a little bit of a, almost like an exit strategy. So there's no focus, that the child doesn't have to engage in eye contact if they don't want. They can just a little bit of an exit if it gets a little bit too uncomfortable. So you can be led by the child almost. So we were just doing Lego, and I just explained that the doctors, they found a bit of a lump in my head, and the doctors are going to have to try and take it out because it's making me quite poorly. And then the kids come up with something. It's great. They the unexpected. You prepare yourself for all these questions, and you prepare yourself for, oh, this might happen. He might be concerned about this. He might get upset. He might. And then it's never what you expect. You know, the things that they question. So then it was actually, well, is it going to make a hole in your head? You know, it was those questions. Yes, you will. Will you use a drill? Will it be a drill like daddy's? Oh, I don't know. it'll be a clean one. Whatever, I'm sure it'll be a clean one. So Yeah, but it was nice to be able to be very kind of matter of fact. And I made sure I tried to stay very calm. And I think children pick up on your own emotions. So again, I wanted to make sure when we did look at the book, and I worked with an illustrator who's done such beautiful pictures, to try and have a feeling of calm and support, because children pick up on our emotions, don't they?
Yeah, 100%.
And to try and kind of lead, it's okay, you know, these things sometimes happen. We don't know, and I mentioned in the book, we don't know all the answers. We don't know what might happen, but we have to kind of just get on with these things sometimes. And it's just a bit of a reassuring, here we are.
And you can't promise, can you, it, because you don't know yourself, especially at point of diagnosis. You don't know, do you? You don't know those things. And there's only so much information you have. Like you said, you didn't actually know how they were going to get into your head. It's not things that you perhaps, but you can't prepare yourself for every single question that they might potentially ask.
And I think that's okay. I think as an adult, generally, whatever the topic, it's acceptable, isn't it, as an adult to say to a child sometimes, you know, I don't know the answer to that, but if I find out, or if I, you know, I will tell you. And I think that I have always been very honest. I might have, you know, sort of played things down a little bit, but I have been honest, or I've never been dishonest with the boys. And so I have, you know, when I haven't known the answer, I have kind of said, I don't know. If I find out, or if I hear something different, I will tell you. But at the moment, I just don't know, to be honest with you. And they've been fine with that. Oh, okay, fair enough.
Did you try not to cry in front of your children, or did you let it out? The reason I ask, because I was diagnosed in A&E and my daughter was 17, and she was actually with me when we were diagnosed, when I was got the, you've got a large cranial mass. And I didn't want to burst into tears in front of her. I don't know why, whether it's a dad thing. So I went off to a quiet room and had a good cry, and then came back again and tried to be matter of fact about it. I was wondering, how did you try not to cry in front of him, or did you just let it all out?
No, I do try not to cry in front of him. But at the same time, and you're right, I don't know if that's right or wrong, to be honest. But I, at the same time, I do also say, you know, it's okay to be a bit sad, or he does know if I'm feeling a bit sad, or if I'm feeling a bit, you know, I'm sorry, Sam, I've got a headache at the minute, or I'm not feeling great today, or I'm feeling really sad at the moment. And, you know, come and give us a hug. I'll be feeling better in a bit.
And I think that's helpful for children to know that it's okay for them to say that. It's going to be natural in those instances. They may have anxiety and all of those things, that they will come out in dysfunctional ways. Like if you make something taboo, like, oh, I can't talk about mummy's illness because she'll get mad, or she'll get upset, or it kind of gives them a way to talk about it.
I think one thing I've learned through going through this myself is we all as adults react to things in very different ways. So I haven't once felt angry about my diagnosis. It's one of those things. I'm fortunate about the type of tumour I have and about my prognosis. So maybe that's why I don't feel angry. But everybody, as adults, we accept things or don't in very different ways. So children are the same, aren't they? So I think it's important that we give the message that however the child feels or wants to deal with things, it's okay. And I think that's one of the things that I've hopefully addressed in the book, is that you can talk about it. Or I think one of the lines, you know, talking may not be your thing, you may just want to play. And another bit in the book, actually, one page, it's okay to feel confused or scared. It's okay if people cry. Sometimes these things just happen and we don't really know why. So I think it is important just to acknowledge that, like you say, we don't know the answers. And I haven't ever tried to say what's going to happen in this book, because it is a book that everyone can use. It's just a very light touch, because everybody's situations are so different. But it does just acknowledge that we might feel different and our situations are going to be very different.
And you've mentioned that you've got somebody to do some illustrations. And for anybody who is listening and you haven't seen the book, the illustrations in there are absolutely, I mean, they are really, really beautiful. And I think It takes the sting out of the words because the illustrations are so beautiful that for a child, they can almost kind of get comfort from the illustrations.
Yeah, they're soft watercolour. They're all done by hand. So Caroline Eames Hughes did the illustrations. She doesn't use computer design. So it's all done by hand and they're all kind of soft line drawings, I suppose. I'm not an artist, which is why I didn't try to do the pictures. And then watercolour colours. So it's trying to get that sort of gentle feeling of a hug in a book, really, because we can't make things better. We can't sort of take the hurt away, really, can we? But it's just that little bit of support to try and make a difficult situation, that one little bit of support at that difficult time is the one thing I've tried to do, so that people who find themselves in a situation that I had don't have that same feeling of there's just nothing for me, nobody thought of me. Really.
Yeah, and I think for somebody who's listening to this and who's in a situation where they have just been diagnosed and are thinking, I don't know how I'm going to, what do I even say? I think this book is such a good resource for parents. We all have our own language that, to talk to our children, but I think having a book that has really simple, soft, gentle language that just for any parent that's thinking, I just don't know how to even approach this conversation, it's such a lovely, gentle way to have it that isn't scary and demystifies things and opens up conversations.
Thank you.
If I could say as well, I read it and it was very moving. And I love the lines, if you don't mind me reading it out, where maybe mummy can't do the things she used to for a while, but she'll do the best she can in her own new mummy style. And that really resonated with me because it took me a couple of years to get used to the fact that I was going to be different after my diagnosis and treatment. And I think that's so moving and important when the children are young, to make them realise that actually you will be different. Not all bad. Some might be good, but you will be different. And that's not a bad thing. That's just how it's going to be. So that, I must admit, reading that was like, I wish I'd had something like that to show my kids when they were sort of, well, and myself, actually, because I didn't realise that for a couple of years. So that's important. How do you think you have changed since beforehand? And do you think your children have noticed?
Yeah, I think I am very different. I think both sort of inside and out, in the things I can do, our lifestyle, and it's impacted us as a whole family hugely. So I've had to change my career, the types of hobbies and activities I can do dramatically changed, in simple terms, so that I can pace myself and manage my activity levels as well as what I can do physically. But then likewise, my attitudes have changed for the better, I think. I don't worry about little stuff so much anymore. Yeah, my perspective on life is so much more sort of positive, and I'm far less easily kind of flapped and stressed about things. So on the one hand, it's had a you could argue it's had a detrimental effect, and on the other, it's perhaps a much more positive. I'm much more willing to take chances and go for things and embrace life. So it's a little bit different, but I do wonder, particularly the youngest, how much he noticed. He does obviously know, and it's conversations that we have to keep going. I can't go there, or I'm going to struggle with that. How are we going to work around it? I think places that he wants to go that I know are going to be really difficult for me to manage. So, and he's aware of that. So we work things out as a family and how we best can do it. And he understands why. And again, I think that's why it was important for me that he understands what's gone on and that I told him. So, we can work things.
You can then explain it to him and he'll understand the sort of the reason, the fundamental reason. Yeah.
Yes, because I am different. And yeah, the things I can do are different. But I do wonder how much he remembers from before. I'm not really sure. It'd be interesting conversation to have. It's not a question I've had with him, so it'd be quite an interesting one to have. But you're right, it is. And I think it took me quite a while, probably a good couple of years, before I kind of really fully appreciated the difference in me and almost accepted it. And I think it's almost like a grieving process you kind of have to go through for the old you.
Yeah,
and it takes a little while to kind of acknowledge what you're feeling sometimes and think, actually, yeah, that's what's going on. And while there's part of me that is feeling great and I've made a great recovery, you know, when you look on paper what I've gone through and you think, fantastic, I should be so lucky. Why is there something in me that's not quite the same? And then you put your finger on it, you think, that's what it is. I'm just missing that bit of me from before. And when you can acknowledge that and recognize it, I think it does make things just that little bit easier.
And I think having those conversations earlier on help to, because like you said, this isn't a one-off conversation. It's a conversation you're going to have with your children for the rest of your life, because there are going to constantly be differences that are, you know, going to be there, that as your son, particularly as he grows older, may see differences between you and other parents, for example,
yeah.
And having that language and understanding of, oh, that's why mummy can't do this, or that's why whatever the thing is, I think having those conversations early means that they can have a better understanding as they go through school, because children notice, my mum's different to my friend's mum, or why don't you do this, or why are you like this?
I've overheard one of his friends asking me quite a while ago, why his mum uses a stick. And, you know, you sort of hold your breath, think, oh, here we go. How's he gonna deal with this? What's gonna say? And he just went, oh, my mum had a lump in her head. Okay, yeah, fair enough.
And that's
my superpower.
Yeah. And that's amazing that he had a language, he had the language to use that, like you'd given him the kind of language to say that, rather than him just standing there going, I don't know.
And I think the confidence to say it's not a taboo subject. Yeah. That's what it is. That's just the way it is now. Yeah.
Having it not be a taboo subject for you as a family, like you said, it helps him to not feel it's something that he has to tiptoe around or be embarrassed about with his friends. Like you said, it's something that he can be confident just to talk about.
I think essentially, parents know their own children best, don't they? And as parents, you have to trust your instinct for your own kids. And for me and my kids, explain to them sort of as much as I can. So now he knows when I'm going for a checkup, really, because my mood changes and I'm very aware that I get that whole twitchiness when I go, because I've still got, so I had surgery, but I've got some tumor there, so I have growth, you know, it's monitored, and I'm aware that I get a little bit on edge, so I might
be anxiety really, is a real thing. I don't know if you know that expression.
It's a real thing. But, yeah. And so, you know, I do find myself, I can be a little bit snappy, I think. Not that I like to admit it, but, and so I think I'm better just saying to him, I've got an appointment coming up, so I'm just going to, we're going to check on, I name mine Roger the Lodger, my tumour. So we're going to just check on Roger, making sure it's behaving himself. It's not just, so for us, that's the way it works. Obviously, that's not going to be the way for everybody, and everybody knows their own children the best. And I think as parents, I think my advice for any parents is just trust your instincts. You know, the children, like my book was because I wanted something like this, and it might not be the thing. Somebody else might read it and think, actually, that's not the way I want to go. That's not the language I want to use. And that's perfectly all right, isn't it? And if my book helps somebody to read it and think, actually, that's helped me decide that's not what I want to do, then it's helped, hasn't
that's
it?
That's equally as valuable, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I do love your picture of the MRI in the book as well, because it's just, because you're right, you look at it, I've tried to explain to my kids what an MRI is like, because I get, the scanxiety, and then you get the nerves and just being in the can, and they have no concept of it. And you show them a picture of it online, they go, flipping heck, Dad. So it's nice to see that picture that just, I don't know, softens it, if that makes sense. And just, it shows that it's not, you know, a piece of cake, but it also softens it so that he'll then have an idea that's less clinical of what having an MRI is like. So now I thought, I wish I'd had that picture a few years ago, I must admit.
Well, that was the one of the few things that I'd said to Caroline, I absolutely want to scan a picture in. And that came about because one of the days, I think I'd had to ask a friend to pick him up from school because I had to go. I have to travel quite a long way for my hospital appointments and scans because there's no hospital near me for my neurologist. So I had to have some friends help with him. So I had to explain, somebody else picking you up because I have a scan. Didn't think really, what's a scan? Oh, right. Okay. So, well, all it is just a picture. Will it hurt? No. It's just a picture of my head. It's very clever. It's a picture of inside my head. Yeah. Very, very clever. So then you try and find a picture of a scanner. Oh, they look terrifying. Oh, I can't show you that. You'll just have to accept it's just a picture. Yeah. They're just going to take a picture. It doesn't hurt me. And so I wanted a picture of a scanner that just didn't look terrifying.
It works, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've talked about the book being called Mummy Has a Lump, but you've also got a Daddy Has a Lump version, don't you?
I have, yeah. A friend asked me to create one. Again, it hadn't really occurred to me, which was, I think, a short-sighted on my part. But so, yes, a friend asked me to create one. So there's a version called Daddy Has a Lump. And also because I'm based in North Wales, so we have a version called My Ganmam Lump, a version Cymraeg hefyd, which...
Multilingual, that's good.
Yeah, so if anyone out there is listening, this isn't just for mummies. This is if daddy has a diagnosis, there's also a version that people can have for that as well. And I think it's just really helpful, like you said, you know, whether they use it or not. Sometimes just having a resource that you can look at and go, oh, that's one way of doing it. Sometimes knowing how you don't want to do it is as important as knowing how you do want to do it. So I think for most people, they probably would look at the book and think, yeah, this is going to be really helpful. But even if you don't, it's like, that might give you ideas of how you do or don't want to do it. And I think it's that starting point, isn't it? Of starting the conversations that is the hardest thing.
Yeah. And that's the level of the book is just a conversation starter. It doesn't go into any detail because obviously I don't know anybody's circumstances and everybody's circumstances are very different. So it is just a support for that conversation starter for those people that want that bit of support for that.
In some sense, it's like a bit like you said with, you know, telling your son, children have that naivety and that kind of blissful ignorance of, you know, that a child has. They don't. So you as a parent are carrying all of that knowledge. Sometimes just having that something that you can hold that's tangible that you can start it off is for you as a parent more important than it is for the child almost.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, the whole process for us and for my son, when I talked back to him, it was no big moment. It was no big thud, centre of his world dropped out at all. He kind of doesn't really describe any big moment. When I ask him, do you remember me being telling you? Not really. Do you remember coming to visit me in hospital? Oh, yeah, I remember eating your pudding. You know, was a big sort of a big deal, really, which is what you want, isn't it, as a parent? So the bigger deals are just that I can't do something. He's very, very caring towards me when I'm, you know, struggling or fall or, you know, something happens. But in actual fact, that those moments that I worried about most don't seem to have had a big negative impact on him.
That's good. And you say in your book that you found it difficult talking to your stepsons, maybe because they're a bit older. Have you thought maybe about doing a book aimed at more that sort of age as well, as you sort of go on the journey, maybe doing another book to reflect the as your children are older?
No, I haven't. I know there are a few different books predominantly aimed at cancer patients for teenagers whose parents have cancer specifically. Maybe I should do some research.
Well, maybe there's a project for you.
Yeah, maybe. I've never written a book. I still don't really, wouldn't call myself an author. It's not something that I ever thought I had a book in me. You know, people talk about everyone's got a novel in them and what would your novel? It's never been something that's crossed my mind before. So I'm sort of just as surprised at having published something as my husband is. My family are really. It still makes me chuckle.
You'd never know that looking at the book. You'd think you had like a whole series of them, like, because it's such a lovely, well-written book.
But do your kids think you're cool now that you've got a book on Amazon?
No, I don't think they do.
Well, you could tell them that you'll soon have a podcast on Spotify. That might also
maybe cool. That'll add a bit of kudos.
We'll put a link in the show notes for where you can get the book. Is there anything, any bits of advice or anything that you would give to parents that are perhaps listening to this thinking, I need to have that conversation, and they're going around in their head, you know, because I'm sure that you had those moments where you led in bed at night thinking, how am I going to do this? How am I going to tell them? How, you know, what do I say? What would you say?
I think just be accepting. We process things differently and in our own time, and children are the same. So if children don't react how you were expecting, or it doesn't play out how you expected it to in your head, doesn't mean to say you haven't done it right or it hasn't gone right. It's gone how it was going to go for your family. You know, it doesn't mean you've done something wrong. So, you know, expect the unexpected. That's kids, isn't it? And I think that comes from both being a parent and have a career of working with children. So you don't be hard on yourself if it doesn't go how in your fairy tale. You will sit down beautifully and it'll all go, you know, there'll be fairy tales and the birds will be tweeting and it'll be lovely. Don't be hard on yourself if it's not like that.
Yeah, and I think it's brilliant. That giving you that grace of knowing that it doesn't have to be perfect. Just starting the conversation is better for them than not having the conversation at all, and for them to be listening in through the cracks in the door, you know, overhearing phone conversations and putting pieces together. Like you said, I think at the start, you didn't want your son to be hearing little snippets here and there and making his own conclusions, which oftentimes can be more scary for them when they're trying to fill in the blanks and they can see the worried looks from the adults around them that are there to keep them safe, and suddenly all the adults around them are, you know, upset and stuff, but they don't know what's going on. So having a conversation and maybe not being perfect is probably better than not having the conversation at all.
I think so. I think just make time for the kids so that if they do want to talk to you, you're there with them. And if they don't, then I'd say that's okay too.
Well, thank you very much, Simone. It's been an absolute pleasure. Yeah,
thanks, Simone. That's fantastic.
For a very difficult subject, it's such a beautiful, beautiful, wonderful book.
So. Definitely.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you'll never miss an episode. If you'd like more information, you can visit our website at thebraintumorcharity.org or email our support team at support@thebraintumorcharity.org. And finally, before you go, if you enjoyed this podcast, please can you leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts so we can reach more people and raise more awareness.
Hi, I'm Tamsin and I work in the individual giving team at the Brain Tumour Charity. Thank you for listening to this episode of our podcast. If you or a loved one have been diagnosed with a brain tumour and are worried about your finances, the Brain Tumour Charity's Benefits and Money Advice Clinic, run in partnership with the Citizens Advice, is here to help you. Our expert advisors can help you access the financial support you're entitled to, as well as give advice on how to make the most of your money. To make an appointment with our Benefits and Money Advice Clinic, visit our website at thebraintumorcharity.org/money or call our support team on 0808 800 0004.